Accession number 30624, reel 6.
Accession number 30624, Mr. Murray Pevant, reel 6. Now, after that, you went back to Tatton Hill. I'll get that right one day.
Yeah.
To the 21 AFU.
Yeah.
And you just resumed flying there.
Yeah, I can't remember the exact details, but basically they were preparing us for conversion to OTU training, which would have been the next detail.
Now, you mentioned off tape, but what would you do in the evenings?
Well, there wasn't much you could do. You'd go to the... every station had a naffy on it of some sort.
Now, what was the naffy? What was a typical... Because they don't exist like... They do exist, but not like...
Well, one does exist quite near here.
What were they like then?
Well, it was just a hut of some sort with lino-covered tables and a bar and a couple of cheery, usually fairly chubby ladies who would serve you rock cakes and char and cigarettes and drinks. I can't remember if they sold soft drinks, I think. And then somebody was pounding away on a piano, and it was a hospitality place, and it was usually warm and friendly. And it was a place to go to get off camp.
And what about, would you go to the pub much?
Well, I'm not a drinker, so pubs really didn't interest me.
But you didn't go with them?
No, but if the mates were going, I'd say, come on, Pev, you know, let's go so-and-so, you'd go.
Now,
it depended, you know, how tired you were, and how you felt, and all the rest of it.
Now, the course just goes on until, looks like till November,
yeah.
Round about November, anyway. To the last day of October is when it
finishes. Right, yeah.
And then you go to the reserve flight of the same organisation at Purton.
Yeah, Purton, you're flying.
And that's the reserve flight of 21 AFU. From
that's right.
Now, what does that mean? How far is Purton nearby then?
Yeah, I think, I forget what aircraft we were flying.
Oxford.
Flying Oxfords. Well, basically, you finish the course and you're just keeping your hand in. And all they want is flying hours out of you. So you can more or less choose what you wanted to do.
And that's nearby?
Perhaps. That's nearby, yeah. You see, haven't got you tuned up again. They don't want to lose you, your tuning, for want of a better term.
Now, so the next real thing is, because you're at Purton till December, you go to 7FIS, Upavon Worlds.
Yeah, this is the thing that I still don't know the explanation for. I was just an ordinary pilot, nothing special whatsoever, one of a whole bunch, a sergeant, not even commissioned, and that was Flying Instructor School. And that was where RAF flying training emanated from. It was like the, what should I say, the University of Flying.
Now,
how I got there, I don't know. And in fact, when I got there and reported it, I said, I'm sure there's been a mistake.
You really were that.
I
that
really was. I couldn't understand it.
And what was the reception like when you got there?
Well, it was astonishment by the CFI there, because all the other pupils there, because once you got to flying instructor school, you're a pupil. All the others were tour expired pilots. Commissioned. So I felt very much out of things and very sort of, you know, humble and bewildered by it all.
Now, how did they start then?
Well, you've got the syllabus
the
there. You've got the syllabus there. The first thing that strikes you when you get to there, that this is a station like no other. It's a pre-war permanent building station. Elegant buildings. Everything constructed on different peacetime scale, pictures of air vice marshals have gone by all over the place, and very, very impressive. I was wheeled in front of my CFI, stood to attention in front of him, and he looked at me and said, what's your experience? And I told him, any operational experience? No, sir. Well, why are you here? I don't know, sir. I've just posted here. I just go where I'm posted. Anyway, the problem was that all the other pupils, I was a pupil like any other, were very, very much more experienced than me in hours flown. But I was very lucky in that I had an Australian instructor who was a really nice guy.
Is that Flying Officer Williams?
Yeah, a super, super guy.
Now, what was so good about him? You liked all your instructors, but you
Well, he understood my predicament, if you like. He said, don't worry, I'll make an instructor out of you. And that was it. He really put his heart and soul into training me. And I responded, I think. And then, of course, I had to go through the same tests as everybody else. So I was on the course.
Now, what's the difference between, I mean, you've learned to
First
fly.
Thing,
what exactly are they doing?
Well, the major difference, let me tell you right away, is you sit in the other seat. I'm sitting there, always, you fly from the left-hand seat, except when you're an instructor, you fly from the right. And you go abroad and hire a car and sit in the left-hand seat car for 2 minutes. You find it a little bit awkward. Everything's in the wrong place. And the sighting is all wrong until you get used to it. Well, it's a lot more than that in an aeroplane. Everything's different. You're flying with a different hand. The hand that is used to pushing a throttle is now handling the control column and vice versa. So the first thing they've got to get you to do is to solo flying from the right-hand seat. And then the other thing is this, that when you instruct under the English system, which was the best in the world, you have to explain what you're going to do on the ground first, then go up and demonstrate it, and then talk the pupil through as you're demonstrating it. In other words, if you're going to demonstrate a stall, then the airspeeds have got to be at the same time as you're saying it. In other words, we will now, what's the airspeed? It's now reducing to 56, 55, 50, and the stall's going to come at 45. And you had to so arrange that everything you said synchronized with what you were doing. Otherwise, you're not giving a good demonstration. And then you have to sit there whilst the pupil does it, and you have to correct him until he's able to do it. And what I was having to learn was all the patter. In other words, the official patter. The patter is the word for the words and phrases you utter in every single aspect of flying an aircraft, and to be able to demonstrate it and do it from the right-hand side.
Now, the thing about this patter is it isn't just... It's the same for everybody.
It's laid down, yes, obviously, because you might... Any pupil doesn't... It's not guaranteed to get the same instructors. So if you're being trained on some aspect of flying, and the next day you get a different instructor, it has to be a continuous process with no great change. Personalities will obviously change it slightly, but basically the wording and the demonstration has to be the same.
Now, is there a lot to learn?
A hell of a lot. How to fly an aeroplane.
So the background...
According to the RAF. It's deemed to be that if you go through a flying instructor's course, you've learnt to fly all over again. It says so in the book. The test you had to undergo was stringent. Every so often you were checked on this and checked on that and checked on everything else. Plus the fact that you also had to do ground training as well, because obviously if you're going to be an instructor at a flying school, half the time you're flying, half the time you'll be on the ground. If adverse weather stopped flying, then you'd have to give lectures on some aspect of flying. So I had to bone up on various aspects of flying which I was going to make my speciality.
Would you pick certain ones?
Yeah, I decided to do basic aerodynamics because I love that theory of flight.
Did you have to specialise in more than one?
Well, yeah, because somebody else might give the same one. Now, for example, if you had like last summer, it was any of those airfields where the floods were would have been unflyable, right? So they'd have pushed you over to ground studies or something. So all the instructors would take it in turn to give lectures.
So what were your specialises? Aerodynamics?
Aerodynamics. I think slow flight was another one of mine.
Slow flight?
Slow flight is a very, very... at one time I was instructing naval pilots preparatory to them going to go out and practice carry-out landings. Slow flight is when you're For example, making a precautionary landing. A precautionary landing is a forced landing that you make whilst you still have full control of the aircraft and full control of the motors, of the engines. You know something is going to go wrong, like perhaps you can see adverse weather ahead or you're running out of fuel. So whilst you still have control of the aircraft and the aircraft is functioning normally, you decide to make a landing before it becomes a forced landing. And to do that, you have to reconnoitre a suitable landing field, and you might find the only available field is a very, very short field, and you're going to have to get into it. So there are techniques for getting into a very short field at very low air speeds. And
such as what, side slipping and things like that?
Side slipping is one of them, but one of them is coming at very low air speed with lots and lots of power on at a very, very high angle of descent. For example, if that's a field, I'll have to describe this. Instead of making the normal approach like that,
a flat approach,
you come in here, your nose well up, and you're more or less bouncing on engine like that, and then pull out, cut back the engine right away. So you go down with a bump, but you'll stop very quickly.
That's clear enough. So that was your specialisation.
Yeah, you know, to describe it and the aerodynamics involved in it.
Now, anything else you were? I mean, you were all. It was all on the Oxford. That's what you were.
That was the standard twin engine trainer. And the interesting thing about that flying instructor school, we had Dutch pilots there, Danish pilots, Norwegian pilots. There were a couple of Yanks, Canadians, RAF guys. There was one guy who was incredibly high in rank. he was higher in rank than anybody on the station. But he wanted to do a flying instructor's course, so there you go. He did it.
And how are you responding to the challenges? Because, I mean, it is
It was incredibly tough. I just devoted myself to it.
Any incidents or things you remember during the course?
Nothing special, really, nothing special. You were treated as a gentleman, funnily enough, even though I was a sergeant. I went into a mess and you were served and all the rest of it. You were treated as an elite, like going to university, I should imagine, a good university. But you still had to fly right, but the exams were constant.
And they were tough. Were people failing?
Oh, yeah.
What failure rate there?
I forget the failure rate, but basically people who thought it was a big joke, you see. They'd done their tour or two tours, and they thought it was a big joke.
So people were being failed.
Yeah, they couldn't be bothered.
Now, you did another beam approach course, but we've dealt while you were there. Yeah, I'm presumably learning to be an instructor on it.
Sitting the other side, exactly.
And then it just carries on through into February 45, and, as far as I can see. So what's the next thing you remember?
Well, being posted to a flying school where I was to be an instructor.
So that you go on there till...
Yeah, if you go, that's it.
Till you go to number six in April, just before the end of the war then.
Yeah.
So you're there all the time, right, from December 44 till March 45.
Yeah.
Anything else you want to comment on about that school?
No, I
know you're very proud to have been there, it used to be Central Flying School.
That's right. I'm exceptionally proud of it, and still amazed and bemused that I ever got there. But, it's a long time ago. Most people that age are dead, so it doesn't mean a thing in my life anymore. But it gave me a love for flying that I have to this day.
Now, you qualified as an instructor. What do you actually qualify as? An NCO instructor?
Yeah.
Sergeant instructor?
Well, I think I've become a flight sergeant by that time.
So you're a flight sergeant,
yeah.
Flying instructor.
And then I went to a place where I applied my knowledge.
Now that's at number six advanced flying unit at Windrush.
That's at Windrush, yeah.
Now, what was your reception like when you go there?
It was amazing. I turned up and got to, I think, I forget which train station. You would know the train station nearest to Risington, wouldn't you? Yeah, I can't can't remember. Anyway, there was a little Air Force Hillman van outside, and I said, "Go in the Windrush, then jump into the back." So I jumped in the back and deposited it. This was an evening, and the thing about it is normally when there's a posting on, you go in a bunch, and I turned up on my own. And as I went into the orderly room, wait there, and then I was shoved in front of a corporal in the orderly room. And I handed my papers over, and he looked at me, and he looked at it, he said, oh, he said, "You're an instructor." In other words, you're not one of the pupils. And all of a sudden, I had a new status in life. And I got a room. Not a bunk, but a room.
Your own room?
My own room.
Was it in a hut? Or?
Well, at the end of the hut. These long huts, there was a room each end, you see. That's right, it was a Nissen hut. Well, they were all Nissen huts, and at Windrush it was on a farm on one side of the road from Oxford to Cheltenham, I think. And I was given my own room, and I had sheets, and I was told where the mess was.
Now, what was the mess like? We haven't written much talk about it. It's a sergeant's mess.
Yeah.
What was it like?
Well, it was usual, you see, because during the war, all the permanent staff, that's the people who had been in the RAF before the war, who had stripes, deeply resented aircrew, as they said, jumping up, you see. And when I went to this mess, of course, as I walked in, there was some oldie there, very grizzled, three stripes. He may have been a warrant officer, I don't know, looked me up and down. And I remember thinking, well, I've got to do something. I said, "I'm an instructor just posted here. Where's the blah, blah, such, 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 and such, and such?" And immediately the guy was different to me, to all the others. He said, "I suppose you're hungry. I'll see what we can get for you out the back," because the bar had closed or the hatch had closed or whatever. And he looked after me and we became mates. And in fact, I met him 50 years after a reunion and took him up.
So it was a good environment in the sergeant
rest. Yeah.
Now, what was the role of the 6 AFU? I mean, who are you training and what for? Because the wars, I mean, you arrived in...
No.
The war's only a week to go, 2 weeks.
Well, nobody knows the war's nearly over. And B, the war was not over, sir. There's a place called Japan. Everybody forgets. The Japanese war was far from over. And so far as the Air Force was concerned, it was preparing something called Tiger Force. And this I found out about later. And Tiger Force was a separate Air Force which was being formed to prosecute the war in the Far East.
And that was being done before the war finished in Europe?
Oh, yes. Well, haven't you heard about Burma and all these places? I mean, the war was going on all over the world apart from in Germany. We were fighting Germany in Europe, but we were fighting Japan in many other places in the world. In India, for example, we've got all the pilots we need now for Europe. Okay? So let's divert this lot, especially those who've been flying singles and have got combat experience, retrain them onto twins so that they can go through onto the force that's going to comprise Tiger Force. Tiger Force existed already, in effect, in all the Far Eastern commands, but this was going to be the major thrust once Germany was defeated to absolutely go and finish off the Japanese war.
So you were already working on it when you got there in April?
Yeah, we didn't know this. We just went to a flying school and just carried out a daily... I mean, we were very, very low in rank. We didn't know anything about anything. We just did what we were told. Throughout the whole of my Air Force career, you just went where you were posted and did what you were told. It's as simple as that. I was nothing, like most people of my rank. But what we subsequently learned was, of course, why we were getting a lot of experienced ex-operational pilots coming through the AFU was to retrain them from singles onto multis. So the AFUs were carried on for that purpose.
So you were training fighter pilots, if you like, other than...
Well, they might have been anything else, but single-engine pilots for multi-engine aircraft.
So tell me about the process of doing that, then.
Well, you just went through the syllabus as it's down in my logbook. you're given a syllabus, and each day you go down to the flight, and on the board would be the name of the instructor, the name of the pupil, and the exercise you're doing, and the aircraft you're going to do it in. And you just, oi, flying officer so-and-so, and out of the melee would come a face, and you'd say, right, let's have you in the corner, and you'd say to him, my name is so-and-so, and we're going to do such and such and such and such. And if you look in my logbook, you see most of my pupils were, in fact, far higher in rank than me. Flying officer this and flying officer that.
Flight lieutenant there, there's lots of sergeants, but there's flight lieutenants as well.
And there was no, in the air they called me sir. But there was no sort of rank about it. The moment you left the flight and started walking up the aircraft, you were just two pilots. And it was as simple as that.
Now, how good, I mean, it must have been strange for you, because a lot of these had operational experience.
Oh, absolutely. It was intimidating for me, if you like. And I realised the only thing I could do was just to be very professional, stick to the script, and keep it at that. Which is what I did. Because I was constantly being checked by the CFI, who rather resented lowly pilots coming there as instructors, to check out that I was in fact doing the job right.
CFI?
Yes, Chief Flying Instructor.
Sorry, of course. So he was constantly checking it. So your idea of your relationship with the pupil was to keep it simple.
Except the very first flight I ever made with a pupil was in an afternoon. I just had a heavy lunch. I got in the plane, and I was as sick as a dog. This is absolutely true.
I hope that wasn't the one with Squadron Leader Cross.
No, Squadron Leader Cross, I wouldn't have lasted 2 minutes. He was the CFI. He was a nasty piece of work.
So it was the next day with that.
All Squadron
Leader Officer Warp.
All Squadron Leader Cross said to me, have you been on assault course? I said, well, no, actually, I've been on the flying instructor's course. He said, oh, I think you'd better go on the instructor's course, assault course. I said, well, sir, because that was a place near Whitley Bay, was it? I think Whitley Bay it was called. And it was a really tough course. They took you out in a little...
But that wasn't early on, was it?
No, anyway.
That's later on. Now, what do you remember about... What quality were the pupils? I mean, what was your
They varied because most of them had been operational, ex-operational, but you had people like some French guys who were very awkward because they were very arrogant and intransigent. And I had some trouble with one. I nearly had to clout him one with a fire extinguisher in the air.
Now, why?
Because he was just being bloody stupid.
In what way?
He was being completely... arrogant, refused to do what I told him. He wanted to do what he wanted to do. And so far as I was concerned, I didn't want any report to go back that I hadn't carried out the exercise I was instructed to carry out.
But he wouldn't do it.
He wouldn't do it.
So when you said...
So in the end, I took the controls away. I said, if you touch those controls away, you're on court-martial when we get back. And I flew back and I made an adverse report on him, and that's the only person I ever made an adverse report on. I said, lacks discipline in the air, is a menace to himself and others who fly with him. Those were my words. And then, of course, I got called in to justify what I had said, and he denied everything.
And what happened?
Well, I never saw him again.
They believed you then?
I don't know what they did with him, because they don't tell you, you know. It wasn't something important in the scale of things.
Just in case it's confusion, if they ever see you, this wasn't Sergeant French, this is a French pupil.
A French pupil,
by coincidence.
Of course, I can
speak Sergeant French there.
It so happens I can speak French, you see, that's why they gave them to me. But my French obviously wasn't good enough.
Now, how many flights would you make a day? Because it looks about four a day.
It was solid flying. It's solid flying, and then you'll see suddenly...
But they were all experienced pilots, dangerous in the way that flying with initial flight...
Well, it was dangerous in one respect, and that is the whole area was solid with aircraft.
Now...
And what we did, we instructors, we each worked out our own, which was going to be our own little patch, so that if we were going to do some exercises, which involved, obviously, concentrating on your flying, you can't keep a good lookout all the time. And the air was thick with aircraft in those days. So we'd My patch was in a little place called the Reekin, near Shropshire. And that was my patch, and I'd try it all the time. If I was doing maneuvers, to come back over there, keeping a good lookout for other guys. And every guy had their own favourite place. And then all of a sudden, it turned to nights. Suddenly, it was all night flying. And it was solid nights right until the day the airfield closed.
Again, with the thing. Now, were there any celebrations when the war in Europe ended? You're quite right, the war hadn't finished.
No, the war hadn't finished.
V-Day.
Yeah. The war was solid.
I mean, you don't do any flying on V-Day.
No, because they took the rudders off all the aircraft. Otherwise, there'd be a bit of bombing locally.
Now, tell me about were there any celebrations?
Oh, everybody went raving mad.
In what way?
Trying to chase every weapon sight. Raided the booze store and got pissed and you name it.
You didn't,
I had a motorbike by that time, and I was roaring up and down the runways on my motorbike, taking people on the back.
So everyone was just
everybody, I mean, it was... I've got some old newspapers of those days, and it's amazing. Everybody went absolutely bananas.
And but then I noticed that the flying starts pretty sharpish afterwards.
Oh,
you're back flying on the 9th, and then 10th, 11th, rest of the month, it's all...
It's all absolutely normal.
Because there's a war on.
There's a war on,
as you pointed out, right.
Yeah.
Now, anything you remember, any incidents you remember, other than that French chap, who was obviously... No. He was an exception, I presume.
Well, there were lots of incidents, but I can't remember them all these days. I can only remember the sort of the thread of the whole thing. And the thread of it is we never stopped flying. It was intense flying. And it didn't die down. The intensity did not die down because of the May the 8th capitulation by the Germans. It carried on the same. I think what was happening, that orders were slowly beginning to filter down from on top when policy decisions were made at the highest level, and they filtered down. And then so I think you'll find it all sort of solid night flying, and then all of a sudden it stopped. The orders came out, the airfield's closing, and within about a week from the orders coming out, all flying stopped. And I ended up being the last person to fly to that airfield for one simple reason. You've gone past it.
No.
That's it.
So it closes in...
July. And what happens was that a few instructors were retained to fly the aircraft out to a dispersal airfield called Moreton Valence. And as the aircraft were being flown away, instructors were being posted away, and then it ended up with just myself and one other instructor on the airfield, and there are about four or five aircraft left which had been on tech, so they had to take a few days whilst the remaining mechanics got them sorted, and then we got our orders, and I flew the very last one out, and I beat up the airfield, I think, and flew it over to Moreton Valence, and that was the end of my Air Force flying.
Now, just, I don't know whether you remember, it's just because it's quite interesting for people, but I don't know whether you can do it. Do you remember any examples of your old patter? I mean, I think you gave us some when you were talking about when I asked you in the last session about flying, but do you remember any particular examples of patter? Just so people get the feel of it from someone who was actually there.
I would like to read some from the patter book, which will make me much more fluent in it.